Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
And we're going to shift gears a little bit today and talk about a subject other than Syria and maybe Korea. But that doesn't mean we think that things have been settled in Syria. Matter of fact, that place is getting to be a hot potato right now, and who knows what's going to be happening and when the false flags start coming and what the responses are going to be. But anyway, we allude at times to the problems, with the Palestinians and the mess that's been there, but we never talk about it in detail. I want to talk about it a little bit more because it looks like things aren't getting better. There's always been this pretense, well, our government supports, we have a balanced support, we support a two-state solution, and therefore we're not saying to the Palestinians, get out of our way, you don't exist and we don't want to deal with you. And that's been the position, but I think it's shifting, and I want to try to sort this out and see if we can figure out the Trump policy on the Palestinians. But things, of course, not too long ago, he changed our embassy and put it in Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. That was a bit of an affront, and many people predicted, and we mentioned at the time, that this will not go unnoticed. But now, just in addition to this, now there's some funding being cut out of spite, not to save money, more punishment for the for the Palestinians, and now the mission, the diplomatic mission in Washington is being closed down, which is another step of severance, and almost it's almost like they're endorsing the principle that was spoken by a candidate back in the 2016 election and others, and that is, well, it's okay because the Palestinians aren't a people. And they seem to be moving in that direction, but I have difficulty figuring out how this is going to evolve because I don't know where the Palestinians are going to get support. There has to be some support out there, but there's not many people rallying to their cause, and yet there's a lot of people, silent and very loud, who will support Israel.
Yeah.
And I think Trump has raised a lot of questions, but I think it's evolving where we probably could state pretty clearly what his position is with the Palestinians.
Yeah, I think that's true. And the latest thing, we just noticed this with the shutdown of the PLO office in Washington. And John Bolton, the president's national security advisor, said it was a punishment for the Palestinians wishing to bring Israel up on charges at the International Criminal Court. So that's it. There's other speculation that it's punishment to the Palestinians for boycotting the peace talks. And ever since Trump moved the embassy to Jerusalem, the Palestinians said, okay, well, forget it. You know, we're not going to be part of this because it means something that you're recognizing occupied territory as belonging to one side over the other. So in a way, as we talked about before, it was Washington's interventionism, i.e. the moving of the embassy at this time, that created this crisis, which now requires more U.S. interventionism. We're going to close your office. We're going to shut you out. You're no longer part of the process.
Now, the one thing that has gotten some attention is the where the money was cut. It's a humanitarian activity going on, and we financed that for many, many years. But this is that punishment that we're doing. And some people, conservatives and libertarians, would say, no matter what the reason is, you cut. Mm-hmm. And you know, there is a temptation, and a lot of times I would vote against cutting because it was really cutting. But this has nothing to do with saving money. This is for punishment, and they're just going, and they admit they're going to take that money and use it in, as Trump says, in a more productive area, but we don't want them to have this money, even if it's for humanitarian reason. This might stir up, excuse me, some support for the Palestinians.
Yeah, it may be the case, because the shutting down of the office comes just less than a week after, as you point out, they cut $25 million in aid to Palestinians in hospitals in Jerusalem. So it's very clearly money that went for purely humanitarian reasons. But of course, last month it was announced that the U.S. would cut more than $200 million in aid to the Palestinians. And that, as you say, normally if you cut that aid, if you put it back into the coffers, you give it back to the American people, that'd be something that you'd support. But in fact, What they pointed out is it's not being sent back to the taxpayer. It's being, quote, redirected to other policy priorities. Coincidentally, so you had that $200 million cut. Coincidentally, Trump's 2019 military budget includes an extra $200 million increase to Israel for missile defense. And the other thing is just last month, Trump signed a defense bill that would include $500 million increase to U.S.-Israel missile defense cooperation. And also it also included the 2016 Memorandum of Understanding that grants Israel $2.8 billion from the years 2018, every year from 2018 to 2028. So there's a big increase there. Of course, that 2016 memorandum bumping up that money was opposed by the Republicans. Dr. Paul, I'm sure you're happy to hear that. Yeah. They opposed it. No, it wasn't opposed because of fiscal concerns. They thought it should be a lot more. So that was the problem they had with it.
Well, usually we can tell a little bit about the appointees of Trump and the people who manage some of these affairs. And, of course, David Friedman is our ambassador. And also Bolton is very much involved and very aggressive. I think one thing is that they are very predictable. So I think this policy of confrontation is going to continue. It's interesting that we threaten about the International Criminal Court. I don't think we're a member of the court, yeah, but we're going to put sanctions on them, and we yell and scream, and they're doing the wrong thing. But, of course, we shouldn't be in the International Criminal Court, but it's almost like we're not in it, but we're going to use it, yeah, and to make it to enforce our policies. So, but that's rather typical. I remember having some votes on the ICC, and I wanted to, and you were probably involved, to make the ICC where it would actually, be more fair to everybody. But it finally dawned on me, and I was put down by the Republican leadership. That's not what this is all about. We're not going to get in it. This is our tool to run the show, and that's exactly what they do.
Yeah, everyone is subject to it. But you bring up bias, and that really is an issue, because regardless of how you fall on this, there's no denying that the Trump administration, the top people working on Israel-Palestine policy in the Trump administration, are objectively very biased people. You mentioned Ambassador David Friedman, who doesn't have a diplomatic background. He was a very strong supporter of the illegal settlements. He actually gave money and support to the illegal settlements. Look at Jared Kushner, the president's own son-in-law. He was head of the family foundation that funded illegal settlements, and then he tried to hide it. Jason Greenblatt, who's Trump's special assistant and advisor on Israel, he's a friend of Kushner and very strongly pro-settlements. Also look at Friedman, Ambassador Friedman's senior advisor, Rabbi Aryeh Lightstone, founded a group called Silent City, which was founded to fight the Iran deal and to move toward criminalizing the nonviolent BDS movement. That's a movement to boycott Israel over the treatment of Palestinians. He wants to make that criminal to do that. So these people are in charge, and they're really very, very biased. So it's very hard to reconcile that with the claims from the Trump administration to the Palestinians, you're going to get the deal of the century. We're not going to tell you what it is, but just, stick with us.
The principle of the two-party state I mentioned, they're giving up on that. But along with that goes this principle that is spoken but never recognized, and that is the right of return. And if you look at the statistics, they're pretty bad. They're pretty ruthless on how many thousands of people were removed, Palestinians, mm-hmm, 1947, 1948. And when that is spoken, matter of fact, there were some that were coming back in. I think even this past year there were quite a few Palestinians killed, because they were claiming that this was their property. So that's a pretty hard situation to deal with under these circumstances, and that's going to get worse. But, I keep thinking about, wonder what it could be like if we didn't have the UN involved. I've always criticized, I never liked the UN. I thought they went wrong when they got us into Korea, and also the problems that they've created in the Middle East. So what would it have been like? Does this automatically mean there would be utter chaos and killing and destruction of people? What would happen if we didn't have the UN and didn't have the United States there, and we allowed the Palestinians and the Jews to talk to each other, and they had to work it out instead of vying for power and control and who's going to pay for this and what's going to happen? But I don't know what exactly could happen there.
Well, our friend Nassim Nicholas Taleb, has made this point several times, including at our recent RPI conference in Washington, D.C. He talks about the top-down approach versus the bottom-up approach and how the top-down approach always fails. And that's what we've always been in favor of here. We'll give you a peace deal. You know, it's negotiated by the people up here on all sides and imposed on the people down there. He talked about how before all this involvement, outside involvement, Jews and Palestinians traded freely. You know, from the bottom up, trade was what helped create peace, what facilitated people getting along with each other. And if the outside forces, the top-down forces, had just stayed out of it, this kind of a trade from underneath would have really led to a far more peaceful situation than we have now.
Yeah, and right now there's no signs that this is going to be reversed, because I think, as I indicated, that we probably can now state pretty clearly that Trump's position is quite evident. And I don't know, I mean, you did say one thing that sort of contradicts it. Peace, the greatest peace deal in the century.
Yeah.
We have this plan, and yet at the same time, it's always on whose terms.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, maybe he would have peace on his terms, but a lot of people might die over, you know, because it would be used by force. And that's a lot of people who are the authoritarians and the dictators and the vicious dictators, they're for peace too. They don't want to go out and just kill a lot of people, as long as you do what we tell them. And that's about the way we do, as a country now, we tell people what to do, and if they do it, then we reward them and take care of them. If not, our weapons today, the vicious weapons we use, are sanctions, economic
yeah.
weapons, and people suffer from these things, and that this is continued. But we also threaten military force, and of course, when you look at all the problems around the world that we're involved in, how many problems are there in the world we're not involved? That'd be another question thing. Well, you know, I keep thinking, what would it be like if we weren't there? Well, why don't we go to some place in the world where we aren't there and see how they're doing?
Yeah.
I don't know whether I could find two. I guess there are some, but
remote villages somewhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, we sound like a broken record because we talk about interventionism. But this new crisis, this sort of crisis that's coming to the fore over the past couple of weeks, really is created by interventionism. The interventionism of moving the embassy, as you said earlier, from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. It served absolutely zero U.S. purpose. It did nothing to help our security. It did nothing to help us in any way, stretch of our imagination. So moving this there created a reaction among Palestinians who, you know, had been looking toward Jerusalem as also a capital of a future Palestinian state. So there's a reaction to this action, this intervention on the U.S. part, and so the U.S. blames the reaction as if it came out of the blue, as if there was no antecedent. Why are you Palestinians misbehaving? Why are you behaving so badly? Why won't you come to the table? Well, it's because you moved the embassy. You know, why did you do it? What's the point of it?
Yeah. You know, at least in Israel, there are a few dissenters. You know,
sure.
Peretz dissents, and there was this one article we took a look at, Shimi Shalev, and he's willing, and he writes and suggests that maybe there's a fairer way of dealing with this, but I don't read as many from our American journalists, you know, from doing this, because this is taboo, and it's difficult for a lot of us to speak out. But the one thing about non-interventionism is not only do we sincerely believe it's the best thing to do morally and for peace and prosperity and all these things, is that you're not obligated to take a position.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not obligated to say, well, this is what they should do, shouldn't do, and that offers us an opportunity, but it also opens up the questions, what happens when we allow people to get along with each other, you know, and most of the time, it's far from a perfect world, but most of the time when that happens, when you think of what happens in our country, we have a lot of crime and a lot of problems, but did we ever compare the numbers? Even in the United States, maybe we have to exclude a couple of cities, but when you look at it, most interaction among people, different races, religions, and all this, most people are getting along together. you know, in my personal experience, you know, going through universities and medical school and taking care of patients and being in politics and all, it's a, you know, it's a mixture. But most people do get along, but there's so much friction. As a matter of fact, the concern I have now is that friction is growing unnecessary, even here domestically, because of our policies. You know, when the socialists come in and demand more use of force and more social engineering.
You know, you talk about what happens when people get along. Well, unfortunately, what we know is when people are getting along in these places, in as you say, not perfect but difficult circumstances, the U.S. always seems to come in to to foment sectarian discontent. You'd almost be a conspiracy theorist, but look at places like Libya. Look at places like Syria, where you had so many different religious, social, cultural factions that were sort of working together until we decided to blow it up. Look at Iraq, where you had, you know, not a perfect peace between the Sunni and Shia, but, you know, reasonable peace between them. Then we blow that up. And now the same is true in the Israel situation. It's almost like the powers that be, maybe it's a military-industrial complex, they need to have that discontent.
It seems the places that worked a little bit better, the leaders were more secular. It doesn't mean that they were totally irreligious, that they still may well have had religious belief, but they weren't, dominated by religious belief. They they weren't controlling that, and I think that's where they get into trouble. So the secularists got away with more on bringing people together and let everybody deal out. It was not, they're generally not theocracies. The theocracies tend to aggravate and cause more problems.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I would just end by, if you're ready, Dr. Paul, end by saying this is news that you won't get anywhere, probably. You can be a non-interventionist. You don't have to take sides. You don't have to be pro or anti anyone else. That's the beauty of non-interventionism. You just say that the U.S. government shouldn't be involved. And if you like our channel, please subscribe to it if you haven't already. Invite your friends, your relatives, your enemies, to subscribe to our site, to our program. Go to our website, ronpaulinstitute.org, ronpaulliberty.com. Look at the articles we put up and follow us.
Dr. Paul? Very good. And I think the emphasis on non-intervention is what we talk about constantly, is because we sincerely believe in it. And it's not a bad term. They like it to make a bad term. They say, oh, you guys are isolationists. You don't want to deal with the world. When it comes about, then it's exactly the opposite. But the dealing is not with force and intimidation and punishments and threat with weapons. It's done on a voluntary basis, but it really is a much more open society. And people get along together because of voluntary arrangements rather than the arrangements made by the powerful politicians. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.